I don't know what it is lately, guys and gals, but I am telling you, these ultra runners are making a play in my life, and it's starting to tell me that maybe I should start running more again. I think that's really what the world is saying to me, because there's no way I could actually hang out with these people in real life. But here we are, thanks to amazing HVMN for having awesome humans in your realm, because now it brought Dawn Reichelt to my life, and I'm super stoked to have you on the show today, dude.
Yeah, this is amazing. Yeah, a long time listener, first time caller.
Stay right there. And now we're back. I felt like, oh my God, that's almost a, have you ever seen Adam, what's the comedian's last name? I can't remember his last name, but he plays Dr. Phil. Have you ever seen him play Dr. Phil? Have you never seen this comedy stand up?
No.
Okay.
Is it?
Okay.
It's not Adam Carolla, is it?
No, it's Adam.
No,
Oh
that's
my
the
God,
only
for the
Adam
life of
comedian.
me. Okay, so I'm gonna send you the link after, because he does
Yes.
this thing where he plays Dr. Phil, and it's absolutely hilarious. And he'll be go, and we'll be right back. Then we'll keep it right here. So that's just one of those moments we just had, and I'm really stoked to have it. But anyway, as I was saying, Dawn, I'm stoked to have you on the show. You are brought into my life by HVMN, meaning you are sponsored by them. And I just started to see your content on their page. And I started to see this dude who was just got this wild story. And I figured I have to have a conversation with you. I mean, 2023 USA 24-hour national champion, three-time manual treadmill world record holder. And you love to talk to people on tiny benches.
Yeah, we'll get into that. That started as a joke, but it's turned into this like rad little part of my life.
I love it. So welcome to the show, man. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, no, this is super rad. Likewise, I've been a fan of yours and introduced through Ketone IQ and HVMN. So this is super, super cool.
So I feel like if I mean, we must do a shot now then. Yeah,
we must. Yes,
we must. All right, let's do it. What do you, okay. I know what I love about Ketone IQ, but what do you love about these guys?
Yeah, so I love the mental focus that it brings me in super, super long workouts and races. So my first big race of last year was 250 miles, and I had Ketone IQ along the way. It just kept me from like really mentally checking out and thinking like, oh, screw this, I don't want to be here anymore. So I consider it like liquid blinders. Like, it just keeps me focused on my goals.
I love the liquid blinders. I love that saying, because there is that feeling that happens. And I remember I was doing the Fondo last year, and I was probably about 80 kilometers in, and I hit that wall, you know, that mental wall where like, well, we could just pull off the side and you could just call your husband and he could just pick you up. Like, it's not a big deal. Like, it's not a big deal at all. And I was like, no. And I had one left, and I was like, we're going to get through. We're going to get through with this. So I know that mental blinders. So cheers, my friend.
I love
Thank
it.
you for
Yep.
being here.
Cheers.
Cheers. Good stuff. Have you gotten
Love
used
it.
to the taste? I feel like I have.
I've adapted to it. I still don't crave the taste, but you know, it's worth it. There's a lot of healthy shit that we do and eat as athletes that doesn't taste great, but you do
Yeah.
it because you know the benefits are there. So Ketone IQ definitely falls into that category for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I can tell you for sure. I think the difference I noticed too with it from coffee to a podcast versus Ketone IQ and then a podcast is very different for me. I feel like I'm not reaching as hard for answers. I feel like I'm a lot clearer and crisper in my thought process, and it allows me, it almost feels like it gives me a little bit of a superpower and an edge up on things. And so I'm really glad that you use them, especially for what you're doing, because I have a lot of people reach out to me and say, it tastes terrible. Does it actually work? Is it really one of those things that works? Because they don't know that it could work that well. I'm like, you have no idea the superpower that Ketone IQ can give you if you just handle the taste.
100%. Yeah. Here's my little hack for it. I actually mix it right into my other nutrition bottles, and sip it. So I found out that about 2.5 grams of ketone per hour, every hour for super long endurance events is kind of my optimum. So instead of,
Ooh.
We just did a shot of 10 grams of ketones. Like, that's a hard hit for me. I prefer to kind of the slow trickle effect, so that if I'm doing a 24 hour event, I'm taking 2.5 grams every single hour for the entirety of 24 hours. And I find that for me, that is it's two things. One is optimal for just how I feel and how I stay focused. And then two, it's optimal for not tasting like shit for 24 hours. Because if you mix it in something kind of acidic, like a lemon or lime flavor drink, it really cuts that flavor.
I remember when I went down to California and my husband and I were, we were going for a walk with Michael and we were talking about it. He goes, oh yeah, you just got to try. It's like ketone water. I do this like lemonade. It's like, I do a lemon and I, you know, the whole vibe. And once I realized that, I was like, well, I love that for distance, but I just love to get it in. We'll just get it in. We'll get it done. We'll move on.
Yeah. It's like college all over again.
Hey, right. My favorite thing is to give it to people who have never tried it or smelt it before and then film their face.
Just wait. Yep.
Just wait. It's 100%. The best. It's the best. But anyway, I digress. Let's talk about your life, man. You have become this world-renowned athlete, world record holder, heavy, heavy hitter in the space. And I have to say, just real prior before we started talking, it sounds like there's a lot of digging I want to do here based off of the life that you had. So can you tell me, how did Little Dawn go, I'm going to start being the super athlete? Where did that start?
Yeah. Literally there was never that thought process. I knew a couple things growing up. I loved being active and I loved being outside. It was kind of always my escape. I can unpack this with the therapist, but I've always been running from something or escaping things mentally, and physical activity and sports has always been that. Like when I'm doing that thing, that's all I'm doing. Like there's no crises going on in my life when I'm just running or in sport or anything like that. So I was never really a good runner, but I enjoyed how it made me feel while I was doing it. And I enjoyed the kind of just feeling accomplished at the end of a run. So I never set out to be great at it, but I enjoyed the process of it. And through years and years and years of just enjoying the process, it slowly started morphing into something more than that. Which is obviously the end result, and the still growing result is where I'm at today.
So let's talk a little bit about your life and we'll go into the nitty gritty, because I think it's important for others to understand where you've come from so they can understand where you're going. So let's talk a little bit about your childhood, what that was like. And as you said, you know, I've always been kind of running from something. Where does that come from? Why did that happen?
Yeah. So, you know, just fully candidly, I grew up in a family. My father was abusive, and some of my earliest memories were being outside just to kind of avoid that. My mom and my sister got out. We lived in a women's shelter for a little bit when I was in third grade. And like from then on out, it was just me, my mom, and my sister growing up. And my mom is to this day my inspiration and my rock of seeing strength through adversity. And like she worked two jobs to put me and my sister through whatever we wanted to do, whatever sport we wanted to play, and whatever music, you know, instrument we needed. She figured out a way to get that for us. And still showed up at the competitions and the performances, yet working, you know, one job, coming home, figuring out food, and then going and, you know, working at Lowe's as a cashier late at night. Like it was just, to this day, it's just amazing to look back on the strength that she showed during a really tough time to raise me and my sister. So that's kind of where this whole started, is just seeing the strength of my mom through something unbelievably difficult. And then through that, she started teaching divorce support groups and women's groups. And then I saw the other side of that, of like, hey, like you went through something really tough, but yet you're still giving back and you're still helping others. So I've had this just unbelievable inspiration my whole life from my mom of seeing like just an unbelievably tough situation that I wish upon nobody, but the strength that she showed through that is with me to this day.
Do you feel like that carries you when you're struggling on these
Absolutely.
Runs?
Absolutely. Like she could have quit. She could have given up. She could have just been like, okay, this is my life, whatever. And refused to. And if she showed that strength going through something that most people can't imagine, then, you know, I'm just out for a run. Like this should be the easiest thing in the world, but it's nice having that strength to call upon whenever I want it.
Well, it's a beautiful example when you have a female in your life that is so powerful that way. It gives you this, this extra boost. And I say female too, because men are expected to be that way. Men are expected to be the household, the breadwinner, whatever you want to call it. But when it comes to women, it can go one of two ways. And if you're taught that you can be powerful and your voice can matter and that you can achieve and get through anything, that when you imprint that on your children, it can help them so much more later down in life. And there was a moment a couple days ago when I was having this, I looked at my husband and I was like, I just need a moment of pity. Just give me a hot moment. And then we'll move through this and we'll go on. And my son looked at me and he's seven and he goes, yeah, but you should be proud of yourself, mommy. So why? And I started bawling my eyes out and he put this, and I'm, for the life of me, I cannot take this off. It's fading off, but I can't take it off my mug. And it's a sticker that I always tell him to be proud of himself, to have these moments of strength, to acknowledge them. And it's the, I am proud of me.
And that's amazing.
It's amazing. Hell what yeah. These children, I know, but like these children, like you don't realize.
Yeah. It seems so obvious to them. I think it's funny that the situation you just described it's lesser, but it's very similar to some of the stuff that I go through in ultra running. Like you're going through this, like a pity party or a tough time. And I can remember very vividly a couple years ago at the Leadville 100, I was having a terrible race. Like my stomach was out. I wasn't being competitive. And I came into an aid station and I told my wife, I said, you know what? I want a hug. I want a good cry. And then I want a pat on the ass. And I want to get back out there. Right. And it's like, sometimes you just have to be okay saying, this is a tough moment. This sucks, but I have the strength to continue onwards, even though you're going to let those emotions come out. And sometimes as a guy, it's like, oh my God, he's crying in the middle of a race. Well, you know what? Those are emotions. Those are valid. Those are acceptable, but get your ass back out there.
Can we pause on that for a second? Because I just did an episode with the Meat Mafia where we talked specifically about boys don't cry. And I think as an athlete, I think it's one of the most powerful things when you're able to move through the emotion, because overthinking is under feeling. And when you can feel, you can literally digest it, process it, feel it, move through it, and go on to the next. But when you're told, block it, don't feel it, don't cry, you're a pussy, you're a bitch, don't do that, you're a man, you sit stagnant. It sits in you, and it becomes resentment and sadness and depression and weight. And as Dr. John Deloney says, the bricks in the backpack get heavier and heavier and heavier. So the fact that you just so openly and honestly, and we said this before, but you are practicing what you preach, my friend. When you said, don't ask me it, you're going to get the answer. The fact that you said it's okay for you to cry in these moments and you can do it in front of your wife, and it actually is a sign of strength.
Yeah. Yeah, I think anybody that tells you otherwise as a man is somebody you shouldn't be taking advice from. Like if that person that, like if they see me crying at mile 70 of 100 and they call me a pussy or whatever, it's like that's one, that's person I'm not going to take advice from. Two, it's a person that probably can't beat me in a 100-mile race.
Right. Yeah.
So, exactly. You know, it's like, why? And it took me a long time in my life to realize I don't give a shit about that person. They can say what they want. It doesn't, that doesn't affect me. I don't feel less of a man or a person because I...
And brought to you by Mindful Meds. You guys have been seeing me take Mindful Meds for a little while now. Mindful Meds is a premium supplement company dedicated to supplying humans with the tools to improve their mental health, clarity, and performance, all while supporting their growth along the way. Whether it's the Immunity Blend, Lion's Mane, Inspire, or Voyage, all of their products are clean, tested, consistent, and they've become a huge help in my life. I found Mindful Meds over a year ago now, and I've never looked back. Go check out their website, mindfulmeds.io, and use the code BRASS at checkout.
Had emotions. That's right. Part of life. And it's part of running ultra long distances is so you can feel things and go through things. And I love running because I can choose, do I want to work through my problems today? Or do I just want to go out and forget my problems today? And either way, there's emotions that are going to come out of that either during it or at the end. But like running should evoke something in you, passion, fun, love, hurt, like whatever you might want to feel. It's a great way of expressing it just out in the world by yourself.
How beautiful is that? How you just illustrated that, where you said you can work through something, or you can feel things, or you can deal with it, or you can just run. Like you're giving yourself options. And with running, you can truly do that. Do I want to work a problem, or do I just want to run today?
Yeah. Oh,
I love that. Movement is medicine. Eric Hinman says it. Apparently Lululemon says it on the back of my leggings now. And so,
wow.
Did you not? Okay. I will send you a picture after this. The back of my leggings tucked inside says movement is medicine. I'm like, Eric, do you feel like you need to sue someone today?
Yeah.
So I think that movement is a tool that is so underutilized because it requires so much effort. But if somebody like you can go through a very difficult upbringing, a life of what I would consider just turmoil, because it is inner turmoil, witnessing, being a part of all of it and what that can do to you. It can break you or it can make you. So talk to me about when running really became this instrumental part of your life.
Yeah. So I went to University of Iowa. I rode crew. I walked onto the crew team and rode crew there. And it was actually after my final season when I lost that team aspect, that like basically formal aspect of, hey, here's how you're going to work out today. Here's how you're going to do it, which I'd always had in my life. I actually put on a ton of weight.
Really?
I put on almost 50 pounds, and I remember weighing in at 199.8 pounds. And this is right after I graduated, thinking like, holy shit, I have to make a change because this is not healthy. Mm-hmm. And so I actually bought a bike and based on a recommendation of a friend, started biking, just got out, started doing some biking, realized right away that long days out just with myself and the bike were it for me. Like that was the thing that I just loved that. And then with that, I had a buddy that said, hey man, like let's do a triathlon. And I thought, two things. One, dude, I can't swim. And two, hell yeah, let's do it. But I said, okay, well, I saw this thing on TV a while back. It's called an Ironman. Like, let's just do that. I've always tended to be go big or go home. Like if we're going to do the thing, let's do the thing. Just like, we're not just going to put a toe in the water. So we signed up for an Ironman, still hadn't even really, I could swim to save my life if I have to, probably. Like I did like the baby stuff as a kid, but really in the last, you know, at this point, 20 years, really never got in the water. So didn't know what I was getting into, but signed up for an Ironman, successfully completed my first Ironman, then thought, oh, this is really cool. Did another one, kept thinking it was cool. Did another one. And then I was living in Chicago at the time, but I moved to Boulder, Colorado, which is like the mecca of, you know, trail running and training. And so I moved there and I was training for my fourth Ironman, and I was doing all this road running and road biking. And I'm like, I just moved to the mountains, which had been my dream. Literally, my mom took us camping when we were 14. We didn't have a ton of money, but that was like our thing every year. She would find us a national park. We would drive from Iowa to wherever it was, and then like camp for a week with my mom, like tent camp in the backwoods. Like that was the coolest thing. And I told her at age 14, I was like, you know what? This is where I'm going to live when I grow up. So, because that the draw of the mountains, I still remember when I was 14 rolling down the window, and smelling like the mountain air in Rocky Mountain National Park the full time. And it's like, it's evoking some emotions right now, just thinking about that.
It's beautiful.
You know, the deepest memories are tied to smells and like the scent receptors. Like I could seriously still smell that air, but I told her that's where I was going to live. And now at this point, 14 years after that, I finally moved to Boulder, Colorado, and I was training on road bike and training on road running. And I slowly had this emotional meltdown of like, I just moved to Colorado. Why the hell am I only running on roads and biking? And so I had a buddy at the same time that signed up for the Leadville 100. And I said, dude, like, I don't know what the hell that is, but I'm going to pace you. And so this is my introduction, is I just jumped in with him and ran a 30 mile, 29 something mile stretch with him. And I thought, this is incredible. This community is amazing. Like, this is super cool. You just run up and down mountains and then find snacks in the woods. Like, this is great. There's tents all over.
You can pace people?
Yeah. So pacing in ultra running is a big deal. Like that is like, usually it's the last half of the race. You can have a pacer, which really it's a lot for safety issues. Like you just, after, you know, 24 hours running out in the woods, you just don't want to walk off a cliff somewhere. Right. So you have somebody jump in, and it's one of the greatest things. If you've never been a part of an ultra race, find somebody that's doing one and ask to pace. So it's such a great experience. So I paced for the first time, and then I watched my buddy finish, and it was just incredible. Like the finish line of an ultra is, there's emotions and it's beautiful. And I thought, I'm going to do this. So I signed up for Leadville 100 the next year. I signed up for the whole Leadman series, which involves all the biking and the running in Leadville, and did it. And I was terrible. I was so bad, but I finished every race. I was almost last in every race, just barely making the cutoffs. But I'm like, this is it. Like, this is the coolest thing. And I had no desire at that point to be competitive, to like try to be, to win races. I just knew I found the thing that I genuinely enjoyed, the summer of training and the community and the racing. And I fell in love with the process of it. And then the results were just like a party. Like it didn't matter what the race was. But then now it's almost 10 years later. It's like the process is still there. Like I still love that waking up every day, putting in the work, grinding, how I feel during a run, how I feel at the gym. And then again, the results speak for themselves. They've just kind of slowly fallen in order. And then about 3 or 4 years after kind of starting and being bad, I realized, you know what, this is something I could potentially be good at. And like, I'm not really going to change anything, but I'm going to start working on the 1%, you know, talking to a dietitian about my diet and working with a trainer in the gym to get a little stronger in my deficiencies. And here we are today. And I'm 38 now, and I'm running as well as I have in my entire life and don't plan on slowing down anytime soon.
I love that. I was just about to ask you your age, because I think so many people believe that this is a young man's sport, i.e. you've got people like Matt Johnson out there who's just cutting his teeth and figuring this thing out. And we had him on a while ago chatting, but, you know, comes from a different, similar type background. And he has this idea where, you know, he's going to run all of these things, but he's young. And I think to myself, I'm like, oh my gosh, am I too old? Is 34 too old? But then you start to meet these runners who are like hitting their prime in their 40s. And you're like, wow, this is how you know that this is not necessarily about your age at all. It is all about your mindset and what you're willing to put into the activity.
Yeah. And I think you really just hit it on the head with mindset. I don't consider myself having a single elite trait as a runner other than my mindset and my mental toughness, my willingness to really just suffer. Like I'm not going to beat many people at a race all like if everything apples to apples, but they're going to start slowing down when it hurts. I'm going to speed it up when it hurts. Like I'm going to lean into that. That's kind of where that's always been my MO is like, I'm not going to beat you. If we're on a track, right? I'm not going to beat you the first 100 laps if we're doing intervals, but that 101st is mine. And then the rest of them are mine. And I will keep going until I have passed you. Like that's always been my mentality.
I love that so much. That resonates a lot with me. It's like, we don't have to be the fastest off the start, but I guarantee you will break before I will.
Yeah,
I guarantee it.
And if you don't break, that's fine. You're going to hurt like hell to beat me to the finish line.
Yeah. I love it so much. Dude, I love it so much. It seems like everything that unfortunately you were handed to face, the adversity with your family and all of that, you really do embrace that. There's a quote that I say that I believe in my bones, and this life is happening for you and not to you. And so you really embrace all of these struggles that happened to you at a young age. So let's talk a little bit more nitty gritty here, because I'd like to understand the process of you and really how you've been able to really strengthen your mindset on top of the tools you've had. So talk to me about the mindset. Then we're going to get into shoes and nutrition and movement and all of that. So talk to me about your mindset. How the hell do you outlast all of these people?
Yep.
What do you do differently?
Yeah. I mean, I obviously learned at a young age how to be resilient.
Of course.
I think that's first and foremost. I grew up having to be resilient and like learning to survive and grow from tough situations. So you know, whether that's an advantage now, it might as well be. I might as well use it, right?
Absolutely.
Looking back, right? I could have either used it in a negative way or used it as a positive. And now it's like, yeah, I went through that. There's no point of trying to hide that part of my life, but how can I use it to be better? And I use it to be better as a husband to my wife. I use it as to be better as an athlete, knowing that, hey, I went through shit, I can get through this. So that's first and foremost. I have a really good foundation of getting over things. And then the second thing, it's like any other muscle, it's just practice. Like you're not going to go out the first time you run and have a mental strength and be a warrior and be able to get through whatever. It's like, no, it's like, you might have some of those tools in the toolbox, but the toolbox isn't full until you literally go practice. And for me, that's figuring out different strategies that work for me. And it's something as simple as, hey, today I'm going to work on external strategies. So something like, hey, so actually good example. I'm training for a 24-hour race. It's inside on a 443 meter loop. It is, it's temperature controlled. It's great. There's been a lot of world records set there because it's so consistent, but 443 meters is short, and doing that for 24 hours straight is boring as hell. So I was actually just out there, and that's in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And I was out there. They had a couple races this past weekend. I actually signed up for them just as training days, just to kind of go out there and practice what mental strategies might work for my bigger race in June at this. So I went out, and a couple of things I did, for example, is so external focus. Okay, the next five laps, I'm going to count how many different objects I can find that are red. Right? Like, it's just the stupidest, silliest thing. But all of a sudden,
no,
you're looking around, you're not focusing on the how mentally tedious it is to run indoors around a loop. But you're looking, you're finding things. It's like a little car game when you used to play as kids. It's like, I spy with my little eyes, and
yeah,
but you're doing
yeah.
that. And so, and then the next time, maybe it's like, hey, I'm going to count. So one of the things I did is I counted how many doors there were in this facility. Like, it's just, it sounds so silly, but it's something that forced me to stop thinking about lap times and how my body felt. And it's just external. It's all I'm focusing on. And then on the other side of that is internal. Like, if you want to, if you are hyper-focused on like, hey, this doesn't feel good. So things I will do is take a couple of dedicated breaths and then say, hey, what's something positive about how I feel right now? What's something positive about my body? Like, oh, hey, that Achilles injury that I was worried about doesn't hurt at all. Great. This is amazing. And then a couple more deep breaths. And then I'll actually say some intentions physically, like, hey, what are my physical intentions for the next hour? It's like, okay, I'm going to focus on my breath and my form. And then that's kind of, it just switches the focus from external to internal and back. So those are two strong examples that I use every time, but I practice them, right? I go out and I get used to doing that outside on the run. I do the same run in my neighborhood 3 or 4 days a week. And sometimes I'll go out without the watch and I'll just count birds. Like, it's like, hey, I know the loop. I don't care how fast it takes me to run, but I just want to get the miles in and have a good time. And I'll just, how many birds can I see? How many dog prints can I see in the snow? So stuff like that really works well for me.
Do you listen to anything?
I listen to podcasts and audiobooks usually. A couple more strategies. So I listen to audiobooks that I wouldn't want to read. And for me, that's really important.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So it's stuff that I'm not so hyper-focused on the content. Like, if I miss something, I'm not going to be like, oh my God, I missed the really important thing. I got to go back. And then I get really upset. I'm so focused on that. I'm not zoning out. I prefer to listen to things that I can kind of come and go to. Think of it as like a really long-winded friend telling you a story. It's like, I'm not going to be hyper-focused on the whole story. I'm going to come and go in this story.
Something like that. Maybe. That's one of those. It's a story. Yeah. There's books that I fully understand that. And the reason I'm not cutting myself down, I'm saying there's stories where you can come in and out. I mean, it's like a story about someone's life versus like an economics, physics focused, driven topic.
Right. Where if you miss the one thing, you're going to never understand the
exactly.
rest of it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah,
But like books, like fiction books that have common characters through a series are really easy for me to listen to. Like even something like Harry Potter, right? I've read the books, I've watched the movies, but I'll still listen to them just because it's a story. And if I zone out for an hour and I come back, I'm not like, oh gosh, what did I miss from this storyline? So that's an example. And then
I love that.
The other side of that is I do listen to music sometimes, but I save it for the pain cave when things are really tough. I have one playlist that is my go-to playlist, and it's, I call it my suffer playlist. And I have one song from all of the closest people in my life. They put one song on that playlist.
Oh
and
my gosh.
So what happens is and it's not all like, you know, Eminem run through walls, like till I collapse type stuff. It's some of it's just, it's the point of it is to evoke a different emotion other than a pity party. Like the song My Wife Walked Down the Aisle To is on that playlist. Like, talk about like something that's going to get me feeling something differently. The song that, and it makes me think, it makes me emotional thinking about the song that, I heard when my grandma passed away is on there because it forces me to feel. And like, it reminds me that it's okay to have those emotions, but let's focus on the positive. And then I think about like my relationship with that person and how much they mean to me. And then I harness that energy to get through this rough moment in my race. So that's like my number one secret of ultra running is that playlist will get me through freaking anything.
Dude, that's amazing. I've never heard that before. What a way to make a playlist.
Yeah. Now it's, and be prepared. Like it's a it can be a tough tool, but because like you said, like all of a sudden you're like crying, thinking about my wife coming down the aisle to a song. Like if you're not prepared to handle those emotions and then morph them into like getting you through something, it could, you know, maybe you'll sit on a curb and cry, but it's a powerful tool to get you through the lowest of lows is the point of it for me.
So you use that when you're running. And so how do you feel about people who don't listen to music? Cause I know there's this like this weird, you know, some people are like, I hate music. If you're weak, if you listen to sound. And then you've got people who are like, I love it. It gets me through. It's the tool I use. It's amazing to cultivate.
I think, you know, whatever, right? You're out there running. It's for you. It's not for me. Like who gives a shit what I think about how you run? First of all, like the only person that, or the only organization that really cares about this is the United States Track and Field. They actually ban headphones and phones during competition. So when I won the 24-hour national title last year, you couldn't use headphones. You couldn't use music at all. So that adds another element of difficulty, a 24-hour race and a 1-mile loop.
Can we talk about that?
Yeah.
Okay. How the hell do you prep for that?
Yeah, well, the mental training is a big piece. And this is where it goes back to having a lot of arrows in that quiver of mental strategies, because that race, for example, that it started off pouring rain for the first 6 or so hours. So you're already soaking wet. And like, I got a little toe blister like right off the bat, like it's just terrible. And then it got hot as hell because we were in Arizona, so it's like humid and 85, and it's just, you just do it, right? It's one of those things is figuring out how to not focus that, oh my god, I have 18 hours left on this stupid loop. You just find these like micro things, and example that playlist could have helped, but I didn't have access to it, so I know what songs are on that playlist. So I can kind of go through them in my head and be like, okay, for the next lap, I'm going to mentally think about this song. And it sounds goofy, but it kind of worked for me. Counting birds, counting bushes, anything not to focus on lap times. And then later, once it became apparent, so I was in the lead and I could see the second place dude like kind of dropping back and starting to walk. And like, I let myself relax a little bit and thought, oh, he's walking, I'm a couple miles up, I can walk too. And I wish I wouldn't have, but I did. And then I thought, okay, what the hell? I'm going to go for it. I'm going to run again once I kind of mentally reset. Mm-hmm. So it's a really strange part of ultra running is being able to get through really boring and monotonous things. So I started this whole mental training side was when I went for the treadmill world records on the assault runner, is I knew like, holy crap, if I was going to be running on a treadmill for 24 hours, I needed a ton of strategies to help me not want to get off. Cause if you think about it, like 24 hours on a loop or 24 hours on a treadmill, you're always pretty damn close to just deciding you're done. And then like, hey, there's my car. I can just be done. Like nothing's keeping you out there other than mental strategies, keeping your eyes on like, what did you want to accomplish today? Thinking about bigger picture, thinking about smaller picture. And then knowing that at the end of the day, I control what happens. Like I control that narrative. I control that story. And do I want to tell that story that I stopped when it got hard, or do I want to tell this story now? That's like, hey, I won the 24-hour national championship. I set those world records because I refused to quit. Like that's the story that I want to tell.
How do you handle bathroom breaks in that?
The treadmill is, I just go to the bathroom, right? The clock keeps going, but you know, that's either format, your only currency is time. So you have to be careful of how you spend it. The 24 hour stuff, like as a dude, I have a little bit of an advantage over females where I can just kind of, especially the outside races, I can just kind of go. The guy that set the US 24 hour record a couple years ago, like with just like piss in a bottle as he ran and then chuck it in the next lap. And I mean, there's different strategies, but you can pull off whenever you want, do whatever you want, go stretch, go sit down. But the clock keeps rolling. So there's always that pressure and knowing that, yeah, I'm spending currency by being out, not being out there. Even if you're walking and doing something, it's better than being stationary.
Right. Yeah. So talk to me about nutrition. You know, we talked about ketones, and obviously that's a big part of your life when you're using them for 24 hours, when you're using them for Leadville and these things. So like, talk to me about your nutrition. How hard was that to get dialed? Yeah. How happier were you at? And what do you find that you could probably improve on?
Well, you can always improve. Right. So I'll circle back to that. So it's taken me a long time. And this is, it's difficult because when it comes to ultra endurance stuff, it's your N of one at the end of the day. And so if you're not self-experimenting, you're not figuring out what works best for you, then you're not optimizing your ability to perform. So like, I'm not an advocate for any specific diet, any specific lifestyle. I'm an advocate for people figuring out what works for you. And how that worked for me is, so let's start lifestyle diet is I've tried just about everything just out of curiosity, from keto to I was vegetarian for 2 years. Like I've dabbled with a lot, but the core principle is when I did that, I collected data to see how I performed, how I recovered, and how I felt. So keeping data is the best way to help you figure out your diet and lifestyle. So I literally just came off of 2 years of plant-based because lots of data was telling me, hey, like maybe less animal-based protein would be worthwhile. And so when I say data, I'm collecting sleep data. So things like HRV, overnight heart rate, I'm collecting performance data from the next day. And I'm also doing quarterly blood draws to look at various levels internally. So I'm not just kind of guessing at what's working for me. And then there's also the qualitative piece of, it's like, hey, how do I feel? Like if the blood draw says one thing, but I feel like shit, like that's not worth it to me. I'm a human being. I want to enjoy my life. I'm not. So I collected data. I'm making decisions based off of that. But I'm willing to try things. So I tried keto for a while, and that's an example of like, I just didn't love how I felt on it. And I wasn't performing necessarily the best. I did it for 6 months and it's like, yeah, not for me long-term. Good tool to practice short-term to teach your body how to feel when it's maybe calorically deficient, especially in 100+ mile racing, you're going to get to that point. So you should know how it feels, what you're doing, things like that, but maybe not for me, the long-term solution. So I tried some things and then I went plant-based. And then again, the data was kind of saying, hey, maybe it's time to add some lean animal protein back to your diet. Let's add in. So I've added in chicken and turkey now. But this whole thing with plant-based started because I realized based on the data that I do not process red meat well. I just looking at how I was sleeping, how I was recovering, like I wasn't performing and I wasn't sleeping well when I ate red meat. And I came from like, I smoked brisket in my house like 3 days a week. Like I was a huge meat eater. I loved brisket and steaks. And like, you give me a good tri-tip, amazing. And I haven't had it in 3 years because the data said that that's not going to help me as an athlete. So again, not an advocate for any type of diet, advocate for everybody figuring out through data what works best for you.
What's same your blood type?
Yeah, I am A positive.
Oh, so chicken and turkey really work well with you.
Yeah.
So the reason I bring that up is that from a traumatic brain injury perspective, we have, anytime I know somebody goes down to the resiliency clinic, the first thing they say is like, what's your blood type? We're going to start eating for your blood type. And that often really, really, really works. I'm A positive as well, but I don't love turkey and I don't love chicken super well. But it's interesting to hear you're adding these in. Do you feel like the digestive portion of it has changed for you because you've been plant-based for so long?
It was easier than I expected to make the transition back. I tried pork as well and that did not go well, but chicken and turkey have pretty much been seamless back into my diet. And now pretty much every dinner is chicken based and then, you know, turkey if I'm doing something ground. But it's interesting. I've read the Eat Right for Your Blood Type series and the A positive and stuff like that. And so I figured it was worth a shot in here. Yeah, it's been a good change back for me. And it's just nice.
Sorry, go ahead.
And it's just nice, again, going out to a restaurant and having real options.
Yeah.
It's not always the easiest. I live in a very small community that's generally very conservative. And if you ask for a, you know, like a black bean burger or a plant-based option, you you get looked at pretty funny.
Yeah, I know where you're at. I know where you're at. So I get it. So what is, have you checked your homocysteine levels? Have they shifted and changed and improved with inflammation in the body as you slowly went plant-based?
Yes. So pretty much across the board. I was worried about a handful of things dropping below where I wanted them. So I've always had, for example, I've actually always had really low testosterone, and I was actually pretty worried about, okay, I'm low already as a athlete, meat eater. Like, what happens when I go plant-based? And it actually doubled. So I've I'm like in the 200 to 300 range whole life. Yeah. Like super low. But I can't do anything about it as a competitive athlete because it's illegal. So yeah. I've always just had to manage with it, but going plant-based brought it up to the 400 to 600 range.
Wow.
And now I'm settling in, and it's just really interesting how the body responds to dietary changes, and understanding that to me has been probably an eye opener in my career of knowing that, hey, like, the inflammation just across the board is down. Like, my body feels healthier. I can handle a higher stress load eating this versus eating that. So again, not an advocate for going plant-based for anybody.
No.
Or anything.
I don't think you're pushing it.
I get so cautious of people being like, oh, so you're advocating for going plant. Like, hell no, I would never tell anybody how to eat. I just think you should collect some data about it and be realistic with yourself of how it makes you feel and how your body's responding to it.
But I think that's like the most educated, well-rounded decision and the way to make it. I don't think following trends and fads because, you know, Goop told you that you should be, you know, eating trees is going to, you know, help your life. I think you should be looking at what your life needs, what you need for output, how that's going to affect, how that's going to affect your homocysteine level, how that's going to affect your sleep and your digestion, your gut health and the biome, because it's a direct result to your psyche. And that's the other thing and why I asked you so much about your diet is because we understand where serotonin comes from. We understand the gut health. And so what you're putting in matters. And I'm trying to figure out how you are able to produce such incredible results. It's like, what are you doing? What is the secret sauce? Everybody wants to know, man.
Yeah. I mean, there's no secret sauce. It's just, I think for me, we live in an era that pretty much every data point you need to live a healthier, more efficient, happier life is available to you. And you can either choose to ignore it and continue eating Cheetos and processed shit, or you can choose to use that data and make incremental improvements in your life. And so that's just kind of where I stand on everything is we have the information available to optimize our life. And I'm not saying go full like Dave Asprey and do like all this crazy biohacking stuff. Like that's fun for some people, not necessary for others, but just follow some basic trends, like how long you're sleeping, basic like heart rate metrics. Like that is a good, easy indicator of how your body is responding to its lifestyle stress. That's a good place to start for anybody. And then, add the diet in. There's some really cool tools. There's this really cool site. It's still in beta testing, but it's called Cambrene. And it basically takes in data from pretty much every source that you can give it. So like MyFitnessPal or Chronometer is our two calorie tracking apps. It'll pull data from that. It'll pull data from Strava. It'll pull data from Aura or Whoop, like a lot of different sites. Cambrene, C-R-A-M-B-R-E-N, I think it's spelled. But it allows you then to kind of like XY access anything against each other. It's like, hey, days that I ate this, how did I sleep? Like, is there a correlation? And it'll tell you like, yes, there is a positive or negative correlation there. So that's probably on the extreme for most people. But again, start with basic metrics, time in bed, or start from there. And then you can slowly start looking at like, hey, days that I scroll my phone at 10 o'clock at night for an hour, I sleep like shit. Okay. Hey, maybe there's a correlation there and maybe stop doing that. It's not that hard.
No, it's not. But people just have to be confronted with the things that they're doing wrong. And most people don't check the things because they know subconsciously that it's going to affect them. So once you have the data, you're faced with the truth and you have to you're obligated to change it, right? It's no different in coaching. Yeah. I'm going to show you the thing. You're not going to like it, But the reality is it's right there. Now it's up to you to make that decision, right?
Can't do it for you.
Exactly. So what wearables do you use? Which wearables do you find most effective for you? And have you found that one is better than the other?
So I used Whoop for a couple of years. I actually worked for Oura Ring for 2 years.
Okay.
I found that Whoop is better in activity. Oura is better for sleep. I currently use Oura on and off. I wear Koros. I have a fourth Frontier X2, which is like full 24-hour EKG you can look at.
Mm.
That's overkill for a lot of people, but it's a really cool piece of data. So I can look at EKGs overnight and things like that. And then like, you can get really into the weeds on that. I think those between that group of stuff, you can get all the data you need. And then there's blood draw services, either Blokes or Inside Tracker are two just kind of consumerly available. Like I can just go buy a blood draw. You don't have to go through your doctor. It makes life a little easier. So those are resources if you're looking to start getting into data. I think it's a good place to start.
For the American listeners, those are both really great options. For the Canadian listeners, you can go to a walk-in clinic or you can go to your family doctor. They will give you a rec. You can plug that data into Inside Tracker. That is where I started at the very beginning. It works well. For the Aussies in the UK, similar thing. You guys can go to and get a blood rec and just plug all that data in. And it gives you an incredible amount of feedback, which is very useful and beneficial. So
yeah, must be nice to have real healthcare.
Oh, we don't. Like, don't pretend even for a single second that we have real healthcare. No, we don't. We have death care and we have 18 to 24 month wait list to go get an ultrasound.
Oh,
so
shit.
You're dead by the time you get it.
Yeah, we have sick care here.
Yeah. You guys have sick Nobody care. Has, we have death has, care. Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll kill you, but we won't help you. So let's get into a little bit more here. I want to talk about, we've got the wearables, we've got the mental component of it, you've got the diet component of it. Let's get down to something that most people aren't talking about, in my opinion. I want to know about your shoes and I want to know about your kit, because kit matters in the military, how you move, how it sticks, how it runs, how it affects you. And your shoes, my God, are those an important piece of the product. So let's talk about it.
Let's do it. Yeah. So and this is another piece that's so individual, but I shoes on my feet is a company called Speedland. I'm a big fan of them. They make without a doubt, like the best fitting shoes I've ever worn. Cause it's a dual BOA dial. So you don't have to lace anything. So you can and it's dual. So you can tighten your forefoot differently from your, like how you have your heel locked in. It's the best. And it's actually this shoe right here.
Let me see.
This is the shoe. They made a custom like road shoe. They currently really only do trail, but this is the custom shoe they made for me when I did my treadmill world record.
That is sexy. So
it actually says like Don Reichel world treadmill world record or world record attempt on the side. So this is always right here by my
it's desk. A slick shoe, man. That BOA system, whether it's road biking, whether it's shoes. I mean, my son has some with BOAs. They are slick.
Yeah, it's just super convenient for lacing, getting in and out, things like that. So I'm a big advocate of Speedland. It just fits and works really well.
For sure.
It's definitely high end. Like it is the Ferrari of trail running shoes, but it's worth it to me. And then from there, I have worn and tried on just about everything you can possibly try on to figure out what works for me. And I can tell you, I'm a half tight guy. Half tights are not the sexiest thing in the world to wear, but they're the most comfortable. They keep me from chafing, which is really the only goal. I don't care how I look as long as I don't chafe or get torn up. So half tights, the way to go. And lined shorts for me, the way to go. I think socks are kind of the forgotten element of all of this.
Yeah.
I would argue for a lot of people, they should spend a lot more time figuring out what socks work for you than anything else, because that's the point of friction of your shoes. And more people drop out of ultras. The top two reasons people drop out of ultras: stomach issues and blisters on your feet.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're not figuring out what socks fit the best and feel the best, then you know you're wasting yourself or wasting your opportunity of a ultra. So figure out what socks works. There's so many different things on the market. I know a lot of people like the toe socks. Kind of bugs me to have stuff in between my toes, so I don't do that. But there's a million different fit and feel and thicknesses and widths, and like it's just all I can say is socks very underappreciated for how important it is for ultra. So go out there, find what socks work for you. Be willing to invest. That's probably the area that I spend the most money in is socks, because I always try new things. I'm always looking to find that next best thing. Even though I know what is going to work for me, I'm willing to try something new because, hey, this one might work a little better. So it's one area that I think people should invest a ton of time figuring out what's best for them. And then, you know, the upper body, it's shirt or singlet, doesn't matter. A good running jacket, I think, is something that everybody should have. It's the prices are crazy these days. They're expensive. It is what it is. Get yourself a good shell. The biggest thing that I always see is people like, oh, there's bad weather outside, I don't want to go run. It's like, no, there's no bad weather. You're just underprepared. You don't have the right gear to go out and run in it. Like, get yourself a rain jacket, get yourself some better gear and go do it. And I'm not here to say what brand is best for anybody, but get some gear so you don't have that excuse that the weather's crappy. Like, remove that from your vocabulary. I always, there's this quote, it's like, there is no bad weather, just weak people with poor outfits. And it's like, just get yourself out in the snow or the rain with the right stuff. So, you know, go out there, get your kit. Running, everybody says running is like, oh, it's cheap, you just get a pair of shoes. It's like, nah, if you actually want to do a ton of miles a week, it's not that cheap of a sport.
Yeah,
but the good stuff that you buy will last you for a very long time.
Or just get really fast and start approaching brands.
Or that's worked well.
I think, okay, so I want to talk about that for a second, because I think it's a really, people have this belief that you have to have 500,000 followers and 1 million followers and all of these things to reach out to brands. And I will tell you right now, if you are exactly who you say you are and you show up accordingly and you can produce a good product, meaning you can make good reels, you can take some good photos, brands want authentic people. They don't want to always go to the athletes that are getting paid six figures to wear their stuff. They want everyday people to do that.
Yeah, 100%. And it's like, look at me. I work full time. I run a lot. I work out. Like, I'm the high end of the everybody type. I don't run full time. That's not my job. People aren't paying me to run. Like, yeah, I get free gear and some shoes, and once in a while I'll get a podium check, but it's not like I can make a living from the level that I'm at. So yeah, you're exactly right. The products that work with me generally are like, hey, like, this dude is, he can relate, or people can relate to him. He's running a lot, he's working a lot, and he's still successful. So it's a different vibe than the guy that, you know, the super, super, super elite that wins absolutely everything. People look at that and they're like, oh, whatever the brand that they're wearing, you know, they're getting paid a lot of money to wear that.
Absolutely.
And then it's like, okay, where is the authenticity in that? Like, if they weren't getting paid six figures to wear that, would they still be wearing it? And then you just don't know. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's cool, it's good marketing. But like, hey, I'd rather see the person that's freaking grinding and chooses X, Y, and Z, and then is successful with that versus the person, you know, is getting a big fat paycheck.
That's what I mean. I think there's so much, if people are willing to believe in themselves enough to ask, I think it's about taking calculated risk and putting yourself in a position to be told no. Most people don't accept the word no, have never been told no, or have been coddled. You, my friend, have grown up in an environment where that was a standard. And so you knew how to approach things, and you were knew that people were going to tell you no, or you knew that they were going to say, well, maybe not quite yet, but it didn't always mean no. And I think that's a really important point to illustrate, because people want to try things, but it might be just a little out of their reach. The best thing you can do is use social media. It's at your disposal. It's a beautiful tool. You can DM them, and then they will give you an email address, or they won't. And then you move on. But ultimately, it's about staying true to who you are and not always climbing for a paycheck. You don't have to have 1 million followers. I'm pretty sure you and I think I'm like, what, like 16,000, 17,000. You're like 20, 25. Like, it's not about the number. It's about what people resonate with and what you bring forward for that brand.
Well, and I'm in a good spot too, because I can... I only reach out and I only want to work with brands I already use.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't, like, I don't need to feel that pull of like, oh yeah, I could really use the money from this brand, even though it's some, you know, trinkety shit that I've never even heard of. Mm-hmm. Like, it's no, it's like, hey, I've been using this for a long time. Let me reach out to you and say, hey, here's what I can bring to the table. Like, I don't need, I have a good job. Like, I don't need to get paid from this. Like, let's just, how can we both benefit from working together? Exactly. And that to me is, it's a lot more fun than feeling like I feel obligated to every single day make it real with a piece of product. And, you know, we both know people that that's their whole lifestyle is products 3 times a day in reels. And that's fine for them. They're making, people that do that well are making a shit ton of money right now.
Yeah.
Like crazy amounts of money. But it's just not, it'll never be my style. Like
doesn't resonate.
It just doesn't feel good to be a walking billboard. I want my people to know if I promote a product, it's something that I used authentically to start and have now created literally just a brand that I started working with. I've been using their product for 10 years and did a reel just on my own, just because I genuinely believed in the product. And they reshared it. And so I reached out and said, hey, like, is there anything here? And it's a freaking sports laundry detergent that I've used for 10 years.
Dude, that's sick.
Yeah, right. And they're like, actually, yeah, we saw your stuff. This is amazing. And now I have it's not, you know, super lucrative, but it's a decent deal to do one reel a month for these guys. And it's just because it's a product I've been using for 10 years. I've been paying for it. It's literally on my auto ship from Amazon. and like, it's just, I just believed in it so much. I just threw a reel out doing freaking laundry as an athlete. And they're like, this is great. So genuinely, if you see stuff on my Instagram, it's because I 100% believe in the product, not because I'm getting paid to throw something down your throat. But the best case scenario is if I can make maybe pay for my next race and promote a product that I believe in. Like that's right. There is a happy medium there.
Yeah. And I think that's great because you see that there are people who are just every other thing is like, buy this. And then there's just people doing their thing and it just happens to be a part of your life.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. That's amazing, man. So we've gone through shoes, we've gone through nutrition, we've gone through mindset. Talk to me about what makes Don tick and what makes him happy and what he wants to achieve.
Yeah. A couple of things come to mind when you ask that.
Bean and Sprouts, obviously.
Yeah. So my dogs, Bean Sprout, that's another mental strategy, just going back. So I created this. I'm going to take any opportunity to talk about my dogs that I get. So we're going to jump right into that.
I'm so into it.
I run with my dogs and not all the time, but often. And I have never seen anything as joyful as those two dogs going for a run. And so that is a mindset that I actually use in races when I'm upset or sad. I've created this thing that doesn't exist, but I call it the Bean Sprout Run Club. And it's for like when I go out for my runs, like that is my run club. It's my two dogs. And so like I just channel Bean Sprout Run Club during races too. Sometimes I'm like, think about like as grumpy as I might be at mile 70 of 100, think about how happy those two dogs would be if they showed up right now to run with me. And that's a total mindset shifter. So sorry, I took the opportunity.
How is that not a brand? How have you not branded that somehow?
I thought about it. So I started working with the logo, but it's just like, that's my thing, right? Okay. I don't want that to be anybody else's. Right. That's like my little, like me and my dogs out in the world together. So we'll see. Maybe someday it becomes something more, but sorry, I got so excited to talk about my dogs that I totally forgot where the rest of that come from. Oh, what makes me? Yeah. So my two dogs, my wife, my amazing little family here in the middle of nowhere up in the woods of Colorado. One thing that I think a lot about is at some point in my life, I'm no longer going to be able to run, mm-hmm. right? Like realistically, whether that's I get hit by a car and I'm paralyzed, I die, like it's going to happen. And I think that is an important thing to think about because mm-hmm. it allows me to really fully appreciate my ability to do it today. Mm-hmm. So the very first endurance race I ever did in my life was Ironman Wisconsin. And I remember getting into the water before I did the Ironman swim. And a woman was holding a sign and said, the day will come when you can no longer do this. ... Today is not that day. And so that is a motto that has literally stuck with me for now 14 years. And it's, so I'm working on a, this is a little, not yet public news, but I'm going to fucking go with it. I'm working on a custom road shoe that's going to be public for Speedland. It's going to be kind of, you know, like I'm going to co-design it with them and do some stuff. And that saying is in the insoles of the shoe. So when you put it on, the first thing you're going to see every day is the day will come when you can no longer do this. And then on the right foot, today is not that day. And so it's just like my little reminder that like take advantage, even if you feel like shit, like you get to do this. So that's something that sticks with me a lot of like literally anything I do. It's like, yeah, even the tedious shit, there's a day that I'm going to wake up and wish I can do this thing. And my body's going to say no. Like literally I just sprained a muscle in my low back because I'm sitting here a little uncomfortable as we hike this. And I was like, I can't run today, but I had a great run yesterday before I screwed this thing up. And like, who knows? Like, hopefully this is like a couple day thing and I'm back to running, but maybe I never run again. But yesterday's run, I, even though it was a really hard interval run and it probably led to my body breaking down a little bit, I freaking love the shit out of that. And then future me is going to be able to look back and know that I never gave up on my ability to do something. I never just, you know, took the easy route and say, hey, today I'm going to stay inside. Because future me, whether it's wheelchair bound or not even on this planet anymore, is going to like just pray for the ability to go back and do it. So I think about old man Don a lot. And like, I want to make old man Don proud looking back and knowing that like, I don't have a ton of God given ability, but I'm going to just freaking get every ounce of it that I can out of my body. So that's me in a nutshell. And that's like, I try to do that in everything I do. And don't get me wrong. I'm lazy as shit in some aspects of my life. And I take advantage of just sitting down and doing nothing for a while. But if I'm going to get up and commit to something, it's going to be with passion and joy and thankfulness for the ability to do it today.
Yeah, that's so goddamn beautiful. How are you moving forward? What's next? What is the goal besides the bad shoe that's coming? I mean, that thing, I'm sorry, the second that comes out, I need a size 6 on my front door. I will happily.
All right, we'll connect
those.
You with Speedland and make
God
this
damn.
Happen.
I'm going to, you know what? Now I'm going to have to start running excessively again like I used
there
to.
There we go.
Great. Fantastic.
Well, you know, so I've been called the David Koresh of ultra running, where it's like, I'm like,
yes,
join me. Yes. Yes. I have this history of pretty much everybody that comes into my life eventually doing an ultra. So we'll get you.
You know, what's funny that you say that. I actually, I had this conversation with my husband last year and we were like, he's like, so what do you want to do on the bike? I'm like, I want to get competitive on the bike again. I want to get to a point, I say again, but like I started road biking a handful of years back and I'm like, I don't have a collarbone. I've had knee surgeries, broken feet. I'm like, you know, maybe biking will be my shtick. So I got into bike. I really loved it. I love being on my bike. And I said, like, I've done the triathlete thing. I'm not a great swimmer, but I can run and I can bike. It's like, okay, I can do 2 out of 3. We're going to crush. I said, I looked at him and I said, hey, have you ever heard of these ultra things? And he looked at me and he goes, don't fucking even go there. And I was like, but why not? He goes, with what time? And I was like, make time. So now I'm gonna end up doing this.
Any event that you can have a slice of pizza midway through and still win,
absolutely,
is time well spent.
Oh man, I'm so here for it. And you are not far from me, my homie. So tell me though,
let's go.
This is not about me. This is about you, Don. So what is next? Besides badass shoe.
So my biggest goal right now is to qualify for the US team for the 2025 24-hour world championships in France.
Let's go.
So I have two races on the calendar this year to try to make the team. Okay. The first of which is in June, which is in the indoor race in June, which I mentioned earlier. So that race is 24 hours on an indoor track. And so they take the top 6 biggest numbers of the year, go get on the world team. So I'll have to put
you're
up a big
fine.
Big we'll see. You know what, it'll take 155 plus miles most likely this time around to get on the team. And I didn't come really close to that at all in my last 24 hour, but there was a lot of weather and other challenges there that everybody faced, so it kept the number low. But I feel pretty good going into June of where my training's at. And then I get a switch back to the trails here in Colorado, and have a big race in September called Run Rabbit Run 100, It has a massive prize purse, a big pro field. So I get to go out there and have some fun. It's not too far from me. And then back on the track in December for another 24 hours with, you know, hey, if June didn't go well, or if somebody else put up a crazy big number and passed me, I have a chance to go out and put it up another big number. So realistically, number one goal in my life right now, just put up a big freaking 24 hour number and get on the world team for the 25 world champs.
You're going to do it. I know you are. You're too driven. I believe
I am.
No,
I believe I am.
I've never talked to somebody where I'm like, I'm here for this. You got this.
Thousands of miles away. You can feel it through the video.
I don't care what anybody says. There's this conversation happening recently that drives me up the fucking wall. Let me rant on it for 2 seconds. This idea that you cannot connect with a human over a screen. I would prefer it in person too. Everyone would, but life is not perfect. But I'm telling you right now.
Yep.
You can fucking do it if you choose to do it. 100%.
You can feel emotion. You can see it. You can there's vibes. It's not
vibes.
Like you said, like if you were sitting in the chair next to me, we'd have a different vibe, but this is great.
A vibe.
Like this is the best that you and I can do. We have two busy lives, lives, you know, 1,000 miles apart, whatever it is, like, you know, whatever, 2,000 kilometers, we'll say. I don't know.
Vancouver's not that far from you, Holmes. We're not that far.
How far is it?
Vancouver? I'm going to Google it. Look it. Yeah, I don't have a Jamie, but let me look it up for you. Vancouver to, where your Fairbanks? Fair Play,
Colorado.
Colorado. Let's see. You, my friend, are 2,333 kilometers from me. You are 23 hours and 6 minutes driving.
So I was only off by 300 kilometers off of a wild guess. That's not that bad.
No, it's not that bad. It's only a 517 hour walk.
Yeah, but how fast could I run it?
That's my point. You did it. We're not that far. And my point is, dude, I believe it. I believe it in my bones, because you are somebody that if you can get through what you got through, and you can achieve what you've been able to achieve while doing this part-time, homie, you got this in the fucking bag. And anybody that tells you otherwise clearly does not understand what it takes to overcome the things you have, to do what you've done, to be who you are, and to show up time after time when you don't have to, because you have a paycheck. This is something you love. That is a different animal. You can't beat people who do it because they love it. You just can't. You can beat people who do it for a paycheck, but you cannot beat people who do it because they love it.
I'm gonna cut that sound clip out and put it on my suffer playlist. And
let's,
it's just gonna be,
go, son.
In the middle of a hard moment, it's just gonna be Kelsey jumping on with a fucking pep talk right there.
Fuck this,
saying,
David Goggins, beat your Damon shit. Let's talk about the real emotion shit. Let's talk about what it feels like to actually achieve this. You know what it feels like, son. You're going to be just fine.
I love that so much. Dude, I'm ready to run through a wall. My back says otherwise right now, but
that's okay. That's all right. Me and my old man heat bag are also right there with
you. I saw yours too. I was like, oh man, between the two of us, this is the first injury I've had in years, but
dude,
you know
this is our 30s. This is what 30s looks like.
I know. That's all right.
I feel you, man.
This will be short term. I got a massage today. I'll be back up and running.
Oh, good. Well, I'm just being lazy, so I have no excuses. It's just a pure form of thing on my front. That's on me. Man, it has been nothing but an honor. You are welcome anytime you want, as frequent as you want. And I fully expect you to be back right after June, after September, after December. I want to know where you're at. And hey,
hell yeah,
maybe one of these days I might just drag my 5-foot ass right behind you on one of these ultras.
Let's do it. You sign up for it and I'm there. And then we got to get you on the tiny bench too.
I want tiny bench time.
Yeah, I got season 2 launching here in a little bit, so
you just tell me when and where. I'm all yours.
Yeah, we'll
friend.
Find some time. It packs up and travels well, so we'll meet up somewhere.
Dude, I'm here for it. All right, my friend, can you tell everyone where they can support you, promote you, be there to just be a sounding board, more importantly, to give you the fuel you so desperately need outside of Ketone IQ? How can we help you?
Yeah, everything is at Run With Don. You know, runwithdon@gmail.com. This email, if you want to connect with me there.
Oh,
Run With
Don
on Instagram. I don't care. Like, I am here. I am open. Like, if you have a question, shoot it my way. I'll answer it. Like, I feel almost a sense of service of if people want to know something about my life or ultra running or something, like I want to give back and I want to help people. So there's my email. You have my Instagram. Hit me up and let me know. I know nobody's bigger than me. Like nobody's smaller than me. Like we're all the same. And if you have a question, I'm going to answer it.
God damn, you're a good egg, my friend. You're a great egg. You stay with me. Everybody else. That was Dawn. Reichelt. How did you say it? Very German. Tell me how you said it German.
Reichelt.
Yes, that's right. Yes. It's been Dawn Reichelt.
The Germanic
badass, long distance, amazing human, even better runner. And more importantly, dad to Bean and Sprouts. You stick with me. Everyone else, we will see you all next week.